Who really invented rock and roll? Did it start with bluesmen deep down in the Mississippi Delta? Was it Elvis who jump-started the genre with his rockabilly flair?
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music.
Or do the real props go to a St. Louis guitar whiz with an oil-slick pompadour and duck-walk dance moves? Maybe Chuck Berry didn't create rock and roll, but rock and roll wouldn't have been nothing without Chuck Berry.
I took my loved one over across the tracks, so she could hear my man a-wailing sax. You must admit they have a rockin' band. Man, they were blowin' like a hurricane. That's why I go for that rock and roll music.
Berry launched his recording career in the mid-1950s with Chess Records. The Chicago label was once home base for gospel and blues greats Etta James and Muddy Waters. Chess is where Berry laid down some of his classics, including Maybelline and Johnny B. Goode. That last title is also the name of a new 4-CD box set. It's the most comprehensive CD collection of Chuck Berry's Chess recordings. Grammy Award-winning producer Andy McKay produced the whole thing, and he's here with me now. Hey, Andy.
Hello.
So this is great. Great to have you in the studio. And let's talk a little bit about his upbringing. Chuck Berry was in St. Louis in a mostly black community. How did he get into hillbilly music to the point that he was playing it for black audiences?
Well, I think it was in the air. It's music that was most immediate on radio, especially from that area. And so he heard the latest sounds coming through the over the radio and melded it with the blues sounds that was in the neighborhood and came up with something unique.
Only 9 years and sweet as she can be.
It's a unique melding. What he came up with is much different than what was going on at the time in black, white, or any kind of music.
And away she goes, her dad, he must be proud. Cause there's so many places young folks aren't allowed. And it must be good, cause bad things don't draw crowds.
Now, I mentioned in my introduction the Chicago record label Chess. So what was that outfit like? Why did it become a home base for so many important recording artists?
There were two Polish immigrants, Phil and Leonard Chess. They moved into the black community in Chicago and identified with the black community. And one of the artists they had was Muddy Waters. And that leads us directly to Chuck Berry, because Chuck Berry came to Chicago, looked up his hero, Muddy Waters. He told Muddy that he'd like to make a record. And he said, go see Leonard Chess. And Leonard Chess said, do you have a demo? And he said, no, but I'll be back in a week with one. He went back home, made the demo to a song called Ida Red. He came back with it. Leonard said, it's a lot of fun, but this title, Ida Red, doesn't work. And they chose Maybelline. Changed the name of the song, the name of the woman, and it became one of the biggest, the fastest selling Chess record to date.
As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out run my V8-4. Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true?
You know, when you think about why the style was so viral, what was unique about the way that Berry played?
He used a unique mixture of the different kinds of music. Plus, he was the first great poet laureate of rock and roll. He tapped into the explosion of teenage years, especially.
Yeah, you were only 16, so young but yet so fine.
Sweet Little 16 has, it lays a footprint for, the Beach Boys.
They're really rocking in Boston and Pittsburgh, PA, deep in the heart of Texas and around the Frisco Bay.
Was this a ripple effect that carried forward into other musicians?
Absolutely. Essentially, he made the map. Buddy Holly maybe made the map for a band. Chuck Berry made he created the format, though, for rock and roll, from the lyric content to the guitar riffs to the rhythms.
All the cats wanna dance with, oh, sweet little 16.
He was the architect. That's the term that some people use.
16.
She's got the grown-up blues, tight dresses and lipstick. She's sporting high-heeled shoes.
Here's another one of Barry's songs, probably his most famous, Johnny Be Good.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny Be Good.
The amazing thing about Johnny Be Good to me is that it sounds like a folk song. It sounds like a song that came out of the generations, just honed over generations, not written by an individual. And that it is written by an individual.
He used to carry his guitar in a gunny sack, go sit beneath the tree by the railroad track.
Sort of the apex, of Chuck Berry's songwriting, because it sounds so natural. Just something that anyone who the greatest songwriters of any generation would be proud of.
Now, if you remember the 80s film Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox does kind of a faux performance to this song, you know, miming the guitar, lip-syncing, and it brings up the whole relationship between black rock and roll, white rock and roll, imitation, stealing, all this stuff. Sometimes history is told as a one-way street. Black artists created the style, white musicians like Elvis Xeroxed it. But the real story is probably more complicated. How did the black and white musicians in early rock and roll days interact with each other and each other's sounds?
Well, they seem to be... I wasn't there. I'm not quite that
That's
old.
That's a good place to start.
I'm not quite that old.
We can just say, in research terms, given your ample experience, how did they interact?
They seemed to interact wonderfully. They seemed to love each other. They fed off each other.
How did Barry's audience reflect all that cultural mixing? I mean, in terms of white audiences, black audiences, who were his audiences?
Well, I think the audiences were very mixed. From what I've seen, it's an extremely mixed audience. They were in the South, when he played down there, like any other artist at the time, they were actually, you know, chord lines down in the sand as well as in reality, one side black, one side white. But in the North, it was a generally, for the most part, an integrated audience and a good audience, solid audience. I was a little too young, but at the same time, you know, my neighborhood was primarily Italian Americans in New York City, and Chuck Berry was one of our heroes.
I don't run with no mob. Got myself a job. Boy, I'm in a little car. Drive my girl in the park.
Do you think that Chuck Berry gets enough credit for shaping rock and roll? That, you know, people who may be in their 20s and 30s really know enough about him?
Probably not. But at the same time, anybody who delves into the music at all for any length of time usually stumbles to the Chuck pretty quick. I mean, Elvis is certainly the leading, most popular artist from the era, still. But Chuck Berry is not that far behind in so many other respects.
Well, Andy, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
I got lumps in my throat when I saw her coming down.
Andy McKay is Senior Vice President, A&R, at Universal Music Enterprises. He produced the new 4-CD box set, Chuck Berry, Johnny Be Good, his complete 50s Chess recordings. He joined me here at our NPR West studios.
Looking like a bottle on the cover of a magazine. She's too cute to be a minute over 17. Meanwhile, I stink. She's in the mood, no need to break it, I got a chance, I ought to take it.
And you can check out some of Chuck Berry's classic performances on our blog, nprnewsandviews.org.